Part of our problem, as we spoke about last week, is that we're not makshiv ourselves. We're not makshiv how great we really are. We think that we're much less than we've ever been. I think part of that problem is, I guess Yeshiva is telling us the whole time about Yuridus Adodos, that our generations are never going to be the same as it was back in the day, and thinking that we're never going to have the ability to be greater, and that our generation is destined to fail, and that we're just ikvasid mashicha, and we're the end anyway, so whatever, we do what we can, and that's that. That puts us in the mindset of, well, who are we? How great can we possibly get? Are we really as good as we possibly think we, as somebody might say? And the truth is, it's the wrong mindset to have. The mindset of, I can never do right, or I can't be the person that I'm going to be, is only going to take us so far from the truth. It's so far away from what we have. It's just not shaykh. So this concept that we're going to talk about today is brought by Michtav Me'Eliyahu. It's in Chelek Aleph. Rav Ochanan mentions it in Kovitz Mamarim. There's going to be three different things that we're bringing up. But it's a simple concept, and I think something that everybody knows. I want everyone to learn how to ask questions properly, how to ask questions in the right way, and to ask the right questions. And I know that sounds silly, because what does that mean? Anybody can ask a question, and that's true. Anybody can ask a question. But I feel like there are many people who just don't do it in the correct fashion, or do it in a way that's just not the right way. For example, there are people that ask questions that are never not really looking for answers. They just ask the question, they expect the answer to be what they're expecting the answer to be. And that's not a real question. That's just a statement that you're posing, and that's that. For example, you go up to somebody and you say, I'm going out of town for a few days. Well, that's not a question. That's a statement. If you say, can I go out of town for a few days, and you already made your ticket, there's nothing that can be asked on someone like that. That's not a question. That's just simply put, that is a statement that is saying what you're going to do. So you can't say, well, I got permission to leave afterward. That's not permission. That is absolutely not permission. That is stating a fact, and then afterward expecting the Rebbeim to just capitulate, or whoever you're asking it to capitulate to your demands. So that's a terrorist. That's literally the definition of terrorism. Maybe it's not for political gain, but it is terrorism without the political gain part. That's really what it is. So what do you expect? How do you want anything else to go? There are people who, instead of getting, let's just say, a proper answer, they don't get anything close to the real answer that they're expecting or anything, because they don't know how to ask the question. Meaning the question that they asked would lead a person to answer like this. But the problem is that the way they worded the question, the way that they said it, was in such a fashion that they didn't get the answer that they were expecting. It went the entire other direction, and something else entirely, because the way that they asked, or the question that they're asking, has to be clearer than what it is. And I realize my convoluted effort in trying to explain what that question is definitely part of the issue. But regardless, the idea is that when you're asking a question, think it through beforehand. Think it through. What do I want to ask? What are the options of the answers that it could possibly be? If you don't have options afterward, like the answer could be A, B, or C, if you have no idea what the answer could be, then you're not asking the right question. You're not asking a good question. There has to be options. There has to be abilities for people to think about it and ask and answer the questions properly. And the third are a group of people that are thinking that it's not worth it to ask the question in the first place because it's not there. I remember when my yeshiva years ago decided to make a decision that no one was allowed to leave during the week. You had to ask permission from the mashkiach to leave before you went anywhere during the week. And the obvious reason why is because they felt that people were going, you know, out of yeshiva for night seder and second seder too often, and they were missing. So they said, if you leave, you need to ask. You need to ask permission. So I remember there was somebody who got up and he decided he was going to ask permission. He was going to try to ask to see if he could get permission to go. And it was unfortunate because the person went to ask this question. I remember it was a friend of mine that went to ask the question. And the mashkiach turned to him and said, I don't think that's a good reason, so I don't want you to go. And he said, what's the point of me asking? What do you mean, what's the point of you asking? Are you really not getting that? Are you really not getting the concept of what it means to ask a question and have someone tell you what the answer is going to be? Again, if you're your own Rebbe, you're your own person, you get to make your own decisions and do whatever you want. I hear it. That's on you. There's nothing that anybody else can do for that. But if you're asking a question, that's a different story. There's a very, very different question than that. So how do you ask questions properly? What does a person do? Because I have four basic rules that I think everybody knows. And again, these are not things. It's like, you know, saying the most obvious things in the world, but sometimes they have to be said out loud. The first by far is thinking about the question before you say it. Before you say anything out loud, what are you asking? What is the real question? Is the question something that's worth asking out loud? Is it something that you can think to yourself? What are you asking? What's the real question here? Don't go around the question by asking another silly question that if that person says this, then I have this question. No, what is the straight up question that you're asking? That's number one. Number two, by pondering it yourself and seeing if you can answer the question, answering the question for yourself, and then seeing what someone else has to say about it. Meaning, once you have what the question is, you then anticipate, what would I say if I was asked this question about myself or about someone else? And then hearing how someone else would answer that question. By asking it, you think what it would be. So for example, if we gave that example of, can I go out during the week in order to go to a certain dinner? What do you think the answer that a Rebbe will give you? I want to miss night Seder in order to see a friend of mine who came in from out of town. Let's say that's the question. What would the answer normally be? Well, I think it depends on you. It depends on who you're asking. It depends on when the time is. If the time is, we want everyone in yeshiva to be there for this specific Seder, and you're asking to leave for that Seder, you can understand why the answer would be different than if it was just, let's say, a random Seder on a certain night where, you know, you've been there for the last couple nights beforehand. But knowing what it is. Number three, by asking with humility, as if you're not trying to try to rearrange how you want this question to go, but by asking and understanding that the person that you're speaking to may not have all the answers, but he may have an angle to the answer that you might not have thought about. There might be something that he has in which, wow, that's something that I didn't think about, and I can use that for not only this question, not only this one, but for other things in the future as well. And number four, and personally I find this to be the most important thing, by sitting and thinking about the question. I don't mean just thinking, whatever. I mean, after the answer is given, you rethink the question, you think about the answer, instead of rejecting it outright because it wasn't what you expected the answer to be, you sit there and you say to yourself, what was the answer? How did that answer the question? And is that truly what I thought? And if not, if it's not what I thought about, why not? What was I thinking the answer was going to be? What was it supposed to be in my mind? By doing those, obviously there's exceptions to the rules. But again, by pondering the question, by answering it yourself and seeing what you would say, by asking with humility and understanding, and then by pondering the answer, everything will become clearer to you. Your questions will be questions instead of just part of an answer. Listen, asking questions is part of our religion. It's something that makes us who we are. I think everybody here became the people that they are by asking the right questions and knowing who to ask. There are some things that obviously are too sublime for our intellect to understand, so we don't ask them. The Gemara in the beginning of Chagiga, in the beginning of the second Tarek of Chagiga, brings a couple questions that we're not supposed to ask. Malamata, malamata, malamala, malamata, malifnim, malachor. There are questions that we don't get involved with, things like that. But we're supposed to question everything. We are supposed to get involved and ask why we're doing something. For example, why do we daven the way we do? Is a legitimate, great question. It's a question that I have not been asked enough by people because I don't know. I think people just take it as is. I don't know why people just assume that davening's there. Maybe they just reject it outright and say, well, I don't really get it in the first place. I don't think anybody's going to answer it. But this is a question that I have not been asked enough by students of mine, and I don't get it. I don't get it. Why do we daven the way that we do? Why is there Pesukei Zimra? Where did brachos come into play? When did Shmona Esrei start? Why did they add on B'lam Al-Shinim? If you're going to add on a 19th bracha, even though it seems clear that the Gemara in brachos says there are 18 brachos, not 19 brachos, then why add on B'lam Al-Shinim and not anything else? Those are legitimate, great questions. Great questions. And I don't feel that they're being asked. I think that's part of it, of getting involved, and you should question everything. Why we're doing Gemara? Why we're learning so much Gemara? Why is there a concentration on such a thing? Why is this mutter? Why is this not mutter? Those types of ideas are obvious. As a parent, I get questions all the time that are so simple, yet I obviously don't have the answer. How do batteries work? is a question that my kids have frequently asked me. What am I going to say to them? I usually just tell them magic. I don't have a better answer than that. I can tell you how protons and neutrons work, but I don't think that's the exact answer. But I can tell you magic is the answer. That's basically it, and I don't really have another thing. Why did mommy serve hot dogs for dinner, right, when we asked for something else? She must hate you. There's no other answer to that question. There's nothing else I can do. I'm asked questions like all that, and that's the idea. The idea is, does that make me a bad parent? Probably, but the point behind it is that you have to be able to sit back, relax, be comfortable with saying, I'm not sure to an answer, and to be able to, not only that, but encourage the questions of a child, encourage the questions of a Talmud, so that they feel like they can ask more and more and more to get to the point that they're there. Make it an experience that you both can enjoy. Maybe looking something up on Google is worth it, like how do batteries work, right? And setting it up together with somebody else could already be an experience of learning that makes it something worth it, that brings everybody up together. You ask questions about our nation. It's often perplexing to be able to think about how our nation has existed up until now, how successful we've been in the past, and yet we've been the poorest nation, how unsuccessful we have been over the past few years, over the past 7 years, and yet how wealthy we have gotten over the past couple of years. It really is absolutely unbelievable. You could ask questions on the Torah. For example, just saying simply put, at the end of the day, why did we go down to Mitzrayim? Because Avraham Avinu said, Bama Eda. How does that make sense to us? When we look at Yaakov and Esav, who's the enemy and who's the hero of the story? Who's the one being tricked and who's the one tricking? These are legitimate questions to be able to say. And you can ask the biggest question of all, that how in the world is it possible for Mashiach to come to such a fragmented nation? How is it Shaykh that we're expecting after all these years, for Mashiach to show up? Let's go back a little bit. You're talking about Talmidei Chachamim of such a magnitude that we can't imagine, of a Rebbe Akiva and all of his Talmidim, the 24,000, and then add on a Rebbe Meir, and Rebbe Yehuda, and Rebbe Yossi, and Rebbe Elazar, and Rebbe Shimon, and Rebbe Nechemiah, and ask, why didn't Mashiach come at that point? It's a legitimate question. You bring it on to Rav and Shmuel, go on to the Amorayim, and go on to the later Amorayim, with Rav Huna, Rav Chista, with Rabba, Rav Yosef. Go on to the times of the Gaonim, and then bring it to after the beginning of the Rishonim, when you had the Bali Tosfos filling France and Germany and northern Spain with Talmidei Chacham and people who all wanted to learn Torah and were bringing and spreading this Torah everywhere. And you mean to tell me Mashiach's going to come now if it didn't come for them? Go into the Spanish Rishonim, the times of the Rashba, the Ritva, the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Ramban. Go into the Mikubalim, who were living in Eretz Yisrael at the time, the times of the Beis Yosef, when you have people like Rav Moshe Alshich and the Ramak, Rav Moshe Corvadero, along with the Arizal, Rav Shlomo Alkibitz, the great Talmid Chacham, Rav Chaim Vital at the time. And Mashiach didn't come then with a person of the stature of the Arizal. You go even further, the Chassam Sofer said there was one reason why Mashiach didn't come in the generation before him, when he had the Pnei Yoshua and the Notabi Yehuda and the Vilna Gaon. Rabbi Kiv Eger was just a child. You're dealing with Talmidei Chachamim par excellence. The Chassam Sofer says, if not for the fight between Rav Yonis and Eibschitz and Rav Yaakov Emden, Mashiach would have come. You're dealing with Talmidei Chachamim that you can't understand. Then you go on to the years of the Ketzos, the Nesivis, the Chassam Sofer, the great, great Gaonim, when the Hasidim had been finding their way, and you have tremendous, tremendous Rebbes that were going through. And they're just to the turn of the century, going into the Aruch HaShulchan, the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, all the great, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, these great people, and we're expecting it. Just go last generation. You had a Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov and a Stipler going. You had the Bava Sali. Mashiach didn't come then. And now you're expecting it to come? We don't have their holiness. We don't have their greatness. We don't have their wisdom. We don't have their abilities. We're so far away from Nebuah. We're so far away from what their world was like. The world is degrading into something that cannot understand the basic definitions of terms that should be the most obvious things in the world. One of them being marriage. Things that are just pashut, ganz pashut. And they can't. And this world, this degraded world, is a world in which everything's going to get better and everything's going to be fine. It proves to me, it shows me, that it has to be, it's not about the power of Kedusha. And maybe I'm wrong about that, and this gets to how we started off. It's not about the amount of Kedusha. It's not about quantity or quality of Kedusha, because clearly we don't have either one of them in comparison to the generations in the past that were not able to bring Mashiach. It's clearly about the amount that we're able to do with what we're given. The expectation may be low, but that doesn't mean that we don't have a significant challenge that we're able to overcome. It's possible that me not watching a certain video is greater than the ktsos coming up with a chiddush in Siman Shin Mem Ches. It's possible that me being able to make sure that I treat somebody fairly and kindly and think to myself, like, this person deserves an extra little bit of simcha, is greater than any amount of tefillah that Rabbi Akiva Eiger was able to do. It's possible. Because, yes, the expectations are different. But that doesn't mean that the challenges were harder for them back then than it is for us now. It's possible that the challenges are worse for us than it was then. Ikvasa de Mashiach is a strange thing. Our generation has a power that has never existed in the world before. It wasn't there. They could have brought Mashiach with their Kiddusha, with their holiness, with their greatness. And it didn't happen for whatever reason. Something happened that didn't allow it to be. So for us, by us holding ourselves back, by us saying no to one other thing, by us calming down, and instead of getting so angry, which happens to all of us, but saying, you know what, I'm not going to deal with this right now. This is not the time. By understanding where a person comes from, that already could change everything about everyone. It really could change everything. Maybe that's the answer. That by us showing what it's like to be upset at a person, which might be legitimate, I have a legitimate claim on why a person did something. I have a legitimate reason to dislike this person or to be angry at that person. By us saying, I'm not going to let that affect me, maybe that's greater than anything else that any of the previous Rishonim have done. Yiridus Adoros, yes, there's Yiridus Adoros when it comes to our levels and what we can get to in our Kiddusha, our Tahara, our abilities to learn. That there definitely has been. We're not like those generations. We may be, in a way, smarter with how much we're able to do and learn, but it seems like there's something a little bit different. Seems like there's something a little bit missing. But there's something that we have that they never had. And that's our ability to stay away. You have a phone that has anything on it. I dislike, and I'm sure everybody here dislikes, when a Rav gets up and says, a Rav who's over 60, over 70, and says, you have to get off your phone. I feel like they don't fully understand it, they can't comprehend it, the same way that I cannot comprehend the ability, and I'm sure Rabbi Sheinfeld as well, the right of a 14-year-old to have a cell phone. Of a 13-year-old to have a cell phone, that when they're raised with cell phones, for them to say, if I don't have a cell phone, I feel like I'm going to die. I can't understand that the same way that they do. And it feels almost wrong. But I will absolutely tell you, it changes everything when a person one time, just once, is able to say no. He's able to say, I'm not letting this affect me. He takes his phone and he puts it away and he says, I'm not going to watch it. If he says at night, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. That self-control is so huge. It literally changes you as a person. And if you feel you're above that, you feel that that's not the level that I'm on. That's not a problem for me. That's not something I have an issue with. Replace cell phone with anger or your inability to cope with other people's feelings. Or some other issue, my not wanting to learn for whatever reason. Whatever it is, your self-control is so important here to be able to hold yourself back just a little bit more and not do something wrong. Work on that. That is our greatness. It's what allows us to understand things better. It allows us to become greater people. Hold yourself back. Allow yourself to become a better person. Because I can't guarantee any of this. There's no guarantee that anybody here is ever going to make it to Gan Eden. But the assumption is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu would not make a world for 7 billion people to go straight to Gehenna. That doesn't make any sense. The assumption is that you would never go to a hesped and hear them talking about the person who died. And they say, yeah, he's probably a terrible person. He's probably not there. Everybody has something good about them. You all have something awesome about you. Find it, know what it is, work on it, build that up, at a time when you have a little bit of a ben hazmanim, a four-day, five-day ben hazmanim, starting on Thursday, a four-day ben hazmanim, you sit there and you say to yourself, how can I make myself better? Not how can I make myself inundated with turkey and football. How can I make myself a better person with a four-day vacation? Doing that correctly changes everything. Have a good week.